Part C. In this part of the test, you'll hear two different extracts. In each extract, you'll hear health professionals talking about aspects of their work. For questions 31 to 42, choose the answer A, B or C, which fits best according to what you hear. Complete your answers as you listen. Now look at Extract 1. Extract 1, questions 31 to 36. You now have 90 seconds to read questions 31 to 36.
As a physiotherapist of 22 years, I've been asked all sorts of questions, but the one I hear most often is, can physiotherapy help my condition? Physiotherapy assesses, diagnoses, treats, and prevents a wide range of health conditions and movement disorders. It helps reduce pain and repair damage while increasing mobility and improving quality of life. In some instances, it can be an effective replacement for surgical intervention. Obviously, not all conditions can be cured by physiotherapy alone, but help it can certainly do. So today, I'd like to focus on a condition that still creates controversy when mentioned alongside physiotherapy, and that is scoliosis. Can physiotherapy make an impact on someone suffering from this condition, in particular mild to moderate scoliosis? Let's find out. Scoliosis isn't always easy to treat, but understanding this condition and its related issues will help a physiotherapist determine the best possible options. A scoliotic spine has one or more curves to either side exceeding 10 degrees. It can resemble a C or an S shape. What makes it difficult to treat is that the majority of cases have no known cause. Two specific types are easier to deal with, however. Structural scoliosis, which results from the development of the musculoskeletal system, and functional scoliosis, which occurs from muscle imbalances, leg length discrepancies, and inflammation of the tissues. These both have definite causes, allowing us to create an individualised and comprehensive treatment plan. Physiotherapy is but one part of the multidisciplinary network of healthcare professions employed in the treatment of scoliosis. A confirmed diagnosis comes firstly from a thorough physical examination for any abnormalities and asymmetry. If scoliosis is suspected, then an X-ray will be taken to confirm what's known as the patient's Cobb angle, or severity of the scoliosis. From here, physiotherapists work closely with doctors, including orthopaedic spine specialists, in determining the best options going forward. I believe a good multifaceted approach to this is ideally broken down into four distinct phases. The first of these in my programme is pain relief. Although not all scoliosis sufferers will experience pain or even discomfort, many do. And for these patients, the provision of pain relief assists with compliance and also with corrective or prevention exercises. Physiotherapists have a variety of techniques for achieving this, such as the releasing of tight muscles through gentle massage, acupuncture, the use of supportive postural taping, and various electrotherapy modalities, such as ultrasound. Phase 2 is a particularly important step for several reasons. It's for rectifying any imbalances through stretching and strengthening exercises. This often still includes taping techniques until strength and flexibility have increased. Physiotherapy here focuses on both sides of the spine, as well as adjacent areas like the hip or shoulder, depending on what's impacting spinal alignment. The aim is to restore the range of motion of the spine, muscle length and strength, as well as endurance and core stability. This stage is paramount for allowing ongoing treatment in phase 3 to occur. This is because it's there that the patient requires the strength and flexibility gained in phase 2 in order to resume normal activities. These include sport and recreation, which is the objective most patients have in mind during the treatment process. It's where we aim to restore full function. This is where we, as physiotherapists, need to tailor rehabilitation to the specific patient so they can safely achieve their functional goals. This, of course, includes trained athletes who place great stress upon their bodies, so caution must be taken when giving advice. And strong encouragement is needed for keeping to realistic recovery times. The final phase is undoubtedly the most important in terms of full recovery, and this is the prevention of a recurrence. This relies heavily on the partnership between physiotherapist and patient. By this, I mean we identify the optimal exercises for the patient to continue, and it's then up to them to maintain these exercises throughout the course of their life. Here too, other professions may be utilised. For example, in a case of an unequal leg length, a podiatrist could address this with a heel rise, shoe rise, or built-up foot orthotic. What patients expect to achieve and what is achieved varies greatly. However, those with mild to moderate scoliosis who have a commitment to maintaining their newfound strength and flexibility can expect a full recovery, especially if diagnosed and treated early. Physiotherapy is a vital part of this recovery and prevention and should never be underestimated. So, the next time you're asked, "Can physiotherapy help my condition?" I'd be inclined to give a firm nod and respond by saying, with your commitment, physiotherapy is invaluable.
Now look at Extract 2. Extract 2. Questions 37 to 42. You now have 90 seconds to read questions 37 to 42.
Tell me a little bit about the progress in the plant-based movement recently.
There's been tremendous progress, particularly in the health field. At least that's certainly my perspective. So in the States, there's just been a real surge, a real tipping point in terms of the plant-based nutrition movement. There are now entire conferences. There's an international plant-based nutrition healthcare conference. Hundreds of physicians, other medical professionals get together, talk about how they're using this in their practice. I mean, that didn't exist a few years ago. I mean, it's really, really exciting. There's new vegan medical clinics opening up where all the folks on staff are using lifestyle medicine approaches, not just to prevent disease, but to stop and reverse it as well.
Tell me about the main players involved. You've got Nutrition Facts growing, you've got the Physicians Committee doing a lot of work. Who are the main players and what's been achieved specifically in the last few months and last year? What's been the memorable moment for you?
Well, so, you know, a lot of people don't know about Scott Stoll, who started this, the PBNHC, this plantrition project, this plant-based nutrition conference. He's been doing these immersion programs for Whole Foods for a long time now. He has a book coming out.
Okay.
I'm very excited about that. He's just had transformative experiences. You know, he's just a physician in practice. There's people all over who've been doing this in their own little, you know, hometowns. But it's just great to get so many people together, start networking. So there's wonderful resources out now, documentaries. You know, we got a number of documentaries coming up, like The Game Changers and Eat Yourself Alive. And, I mean, it's just, this is an exciting time to be in the movement. And I think, you know, a lot of it is just there's so much, we're going to get there if only because the healthcare costs are spiraling out of control, right? Climate change. I mean, we're just going to be forced to have to take these, you know, safe, simple, side-effect-free solutions, cheaper, safer, more effective than conventional medical approaches, because we're talking about the leading killers, right? The leading cause of death. I mean, the good news is that the vast majority of premature death and disability is preventable with a plant-based diet and other healthy lifestyle behaviors. We have the power, we have tremendous power over our medical destiny and longevity.
You talk passionately about the benefits of plant-based diet, particularly reversing heart disease. My old boss, he was a professor of epidemiology called Professor Tim Spector. He said he met Dr. Dean Ornish. Mm. Dr. Dean Ornish said, the thing with the plant-based movement is you get the sense you're either with them or against them. We're going to talk about that in a minute. But also what he said was there aren't any large randomized control trials. He said, Dr. Dean Ornish, show me the large randomized. Why aren't there any? If we've known about this since Pritikin's day, where's the data, the large randomized control trials?
Well, look, I mean, Ornish published his first RCT, randomized control trial, July 1990, in The Lancet, the most prestigious medical journal in the world. There it was, black and white, proving with quantitative angiography that we can reverse heart disease, open up arteries without drugs, without surgery, just a healthy plant-based diet and other lifestyle changes. There it was. Right, so we've known about it for decades, but there was published in some of the most prestigious medical journals in the world, The Lancet, JAMA, yet, what happened? Nothing. Hundreds of thousands of people continue to die of a reversible, preventable disease.
So it's being ignored.
It's being lost down the rabbit hole and ignored. I said, well, wait a second. If the cure to our number one killer could get lost like then, what else is there in the medical literature that could help my patients but just didn't have a corporate budget driving its promotion? I made it my life's mission to find out. That's why I started NutritionFacts.org, and that's why I wrote my new book, How Not to Die.
What I find very interesting is you say the system needs to take on board this message, but the whole point of Nutrition Facts was to go round the system. Tell me a little bit about the democratization of information and the role that's played and why that's been good for the movement, I guess.
You know, when I started out, ignoring the general public and going straight, you know, trying to train the trainers effectively, going around speaking at all the medical schools in the States to try to, you know, get the next generation of doctors educated. But then I realized that's a slow way about it. We don't have time. People are dying now. I don't need to, you know, for another 10 years for them to kind of slowly take over the medical system. People are dying now. We need to take this directly to the people. And thankfully, thanks to the internet age, we now have this democratization of information. Now everyone has access. Before, the doctors had a monopoly on information about health. And so, big pharma, the food industry, all they had to do is get to the doctors. The tobacco industry, as long as they could get the AMA on board by writing them checks for $10 million, and so they came out opposed to the Surgeon General's report against smoking in 1964, as long as they control the doctors, they control the health message. No longer. Now, people can get to the science directly, educate themselves, and we can't wait until society catches up to the science, because it's a matter of life and death.
USDA, I've read their mission is to expand markets for agricultural products. But at the same time, they're coming out with the dietary guidelines. Is that one of the challenges you have in the States?
The USDA has an inherent conflict of interest. The U.S. Department of Agriculture, look, the same thing happened here in Great Britain. Right there was the Ministry of Food and Forestry, right? And then the mad cow debacle came, mm-hmm. and they basically dissolved the department, right? Put you know, food safety in charge of, you know, medical professionals in charge of food safety instead of agricultural professionals. Same conflict of interest exists in the States. U.S. Department of Agriculture has this dual mission to promote agricultural products. That's what they're there for. But also, we put them in charge of food safety, meat inspections, helping to come up with the nutrition guidelines. So when it comes to eat more messaging, the message is clear. Eat more fruits and vegetables. There it is, right there in black and white in the dietary guidelines. But what about eat less messaging? Then there's a conflict. So what do you get? Instead of eat less meat, eggs, dairy, junk, what do they say? Eat less saturated and trans fatty acids, things like that. Biochemical components, right? Because they don't want to mention foods because that's too politically unpalatable.
But they'll mention vegetables, they'll mention fruits.
Well, they'll mention fruits and vegetables because it's an eat more messaging. Yeah. Everybody's happy. Promote agricultural products and promote health. If they can do it without undermining the profit motive, they'd be happy to make the American public healthier.
Can you just explain a little bit about how corrupt the medical industry is in the US? It's kind of related to what you've talked about already.
Well, there's a number of barriers for doctors. So you say, okay, we understand why some of the mainstream medical associations are sucking up to industry because they're being sponsored by Big Pharma, for example. But why aren't individual doctors speaking out? Well, there's a severe nutrition deficiency in doctors in education. We just weren't taught this in medical school, so we graduate without these powerful tools in our medical toolbox. We just weren't taught how to teach people to take better care of themselves, right? But of course, there's other barriers. There's lack of time, lack of reimbursement. Doctors aren't paid to tell people how to take better care of themselves. And also, there's much of medical education, both during medical school and postgraduate medical education, is paid for by the drug industry. I mean, the number one reason people go to their doctor in North America is what are called blood pressure checks. And they keep going to get their blood pressure checks so they can tweak the blood pressure medications. And so that's a boon not only to Big Pharma, which sell these chronic disease drugs that people take every single day for the rest of their lives because they're not actually treating the cause of their disease, right? Because they're not actually changing their diet. So they need to be treated every day for the rest of their life. So it's a boon to the Big Pharma. But also, that's where the doctor's getting their next BMW from and sending their kids to college. I mean, it's the bread and butter of the GPs, of the primary care docs, is these blood pressure checks, which wouldn't be necessary if they didn't have high blood pressure. The number one killer risk factor in the world, 9 million people dying of high blood pressure, a disease that need not occur if people ate plant-based diet, something we've known since the 1920s.
That is the end of part C. You now have 2 minutes to check your answers. That is the end of the listening test.